Money FM 89.3, best of the breakfast huddle. The Bigger Picture with Ryan Hwang.
Money FM 89.3, thanks for joining us on The Breakfast Huddle. Bharati Jagdish and Ryan Hwang with you. So Ryan, more warnings about rising costs and all this from the latest round of earning reports. Apple and Amazon constantly making headlines. Tell us more about how all of these issues need to be dissected within the bigger picture.
Yeah, that commentary in focus because they missed on the estimates that Wall Street was looking out for. And this is with Amazon pointing to how labor and inflation are adding more costs. In fact, $4 billion for its next quarter. And Apple is also saying, you know, supply chain constraints have been affecting it and they are watching it very closely. So all that feeds into higher costs. To get a bigger picture, I've got Vishnu Varathan. He's the head for economics and strategy at Mizuho Bank. Morning, Vishnu. How are you doing today?
Good morning. Very well, Ryan. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, happy Friday, Vishnu. Let's get into the numbers first from the earnings. And we have from Amazon saying they might take $4 billion in terms of costs related to labor and inflation. They are having it very hard or finding a lot of trouble hiring workers as well for the warehouses. Apple also saying supply chain constraints have been impacting them. But it's worth noting that Tim Cook, the CEO of Apple, says, you know, things have improved greatly in terms of supply chain disruptions from COVID-19. What's your take on where things will go from here, Vishnu?
I think we first must admit there's a little bit of a rolling supply chain kinks and work that's really getting to the cost side of things. And the way to think about it is that freight costs remain extremely elevated. And we still have pockets of constraints on capacity, workers being able to get back, and then the goods being shipped. So the capacity, both in terms of workers getting back as well as, you know, the capacity to produce, as many of the suppliers and companies try to rebuild inventory as well. I think Tim Cook is right. This is going to pass, and hence he does see it getting better, and he acknowledges that actually right now, at least there's no concern about demand being in the pipeline. In fact, part of the problem is there's been a lot of pent-up demand, and supply can't catch up. So I think once they lift the gates, they expect, with some ironing out of the supply-demand differences, they should be on a much better trajectory.
And this is where the ECB comes in. So they were in action yesterday, and they are looking at higher inflation, but kind of pushing back the market in terms of interest rate expectations. What's your take on this? Are they correct?
I think they are on both counts. And, you know, so like we discussed, it will be very difficult to sidestep or deflect any of these cost pressures coming through. They are pretty pervasive, and, you know, where you have got freight, energy, and pockets of capacity constraint involved, it is very difficult to avoid that. So inflation is going to pick up. But the next order question, which I think the ECB was correct to hold markets to, is does the ECB need to react to all of that? And I think the answer is they don't need to react to all of that, and hence the rate hike expectations need to be tempered and perhaps need some patience to assess the situation as well.
Yeah, and also in action on Thursday was the Bank of Japan. They are projecting low inflation for years. So a bit of a slightly different tone there. Walk us through what's happening in Japan, Vishnu.
I think in Japan's case, I mean, there's a confluence of factors. The BOJ has never been able to fully snap the low inflation, you know, trap that is caught in. And I think amongst the G3, it doesn't surprise us that the BOJ is the most dovish and will remain so, because Japan on a relative basis had a much more delayed reopening, and I think activity remains somewhat more constrained. And right now, the higher energy costs will impact on the cost end of things. So the BOJ, I think quite rightly, will remain very cautious and certainly unequivocally dovish.
Yeah, and also the Bank of Canada has been in action this week, and they actually surprised investors by abruptly ending their bond buying program on Wednesday and also pulling forward their expected timeline for interest rate hikes. So they are looking a bit more hawkish than expected.
Yes, we've got two calls here. And so along with the Bank of Canada, we've got the RBNZ, the Bank of England. These are the ones that have turned, you know, significantly and appreciably more hawkish. And there are a few factors coming into place here. I think, you know, for many of these, they are concerned about how all the supply costs interacting with pickup in activity and hence leading to some wage price spirals, particularly. And so they are responding to that. And for the Bank of Canada, it's also, I think, taking into consideration that apart from the labor dislocations and the very rapid rise in labor costs, it's also boosted by oil prices. That's really good for the economy. So their expectation of an upswing is well ahead of many other central banks.
Yeah, Vishnu, you've got this backdrop of rising costs for energy, commodities, even the restaurants in the US are raising their prices on the menus. So when we see the FOMC in action next week, what can we expect in terms of tapering signals?
I think so. Next week's FOMC is live. Given what a lot of the FOMC members have said, it's not just about the signal. I think it could very well be the flag off. I think they will probably very broadly, without very, very hard commitments, keep to the timeline of taper beginning now and QE being wound down completely. That's to say, the step down from $120 billion per month purchase being starting off perhaps in December, announced in November, and ending off by sometime in the middle of 2022, whether that's July or August, I think that they will leave a little bit of wiggle room.
Now, Vishnu, if they do that, what's going to be implications for Asian markets in terms of capital flows and market reactions?
I think in the near term, it shouldn't taper in and of itself, shouldn't be too detrimental. I think, Asian markets have learned how to accommodate this. And so the fact that they are still buying and in quite huge sums means that the global liquidity remains very flush. However, on the other side, because the Fed rate hike expectations are being pulled forward, sometimes quite forcefully, that short end rates starting to rise alongside the fact that higher inflation in Asia erodes real returns here, I think that mix could potentially stir up some capital outflows. Whether this gains momentum to a critical mass where it starts undermining assets and currencies here, that remains to be seen. And I think that will also invoke a lot of vigilance from policymakers.
Yeah, I'm curious as well, what's going to be impact on the greenback, which has been seeing a bit of weakness recently? Is this going to give it some support?
Well, our main case is for the greenback to be by and large supported by the taper plus rate hike expectations in place. The slight weakening of the greenback we've seen is not inconsistent with the negative correlation between the dollar and high commodity prices. So for this reason, it will not be a one-way street. But in particular, if there are concerns about lower returns in Asia, the firmer greenback, especially against emerging Asian currencies, may become a little bit more emphatic and entrenched.
All right, Minchanya Vishnu Varatan, he's the head for economics and strategy at Mizuho Bank. Vishnu, thank you for your time and have a great weekend in advance.
My pleasure. Have a great weekend.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Available on Google Play or the App Store.